Hey there, thanks for coming. Take a seat.
Time to retire to the drawing room.
Mothers of young boys are often surprised at just how gentle and sweet they are. And then they're equally surprised and devastated when that sweetness seemingly disappears in the teenage years. The transition from boy to man is a difficult one, and an important one, if we want to raise good men. Dr. Anna Rubinstein is the author of The Making of Men, and Mark Jelly has spent many years mentoring young men. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
We had a feminist author, Laurie Penny, join us recently, and she got chatting about a generation of lost boys. Do you think it's as bad as that? Do we have a generation of lost boys?
I think we do have a generation of lost boys, and the biggest problem is that a lot of those lost boys are sort of between 15 and 45 years of age.
That's a lot of lost boys.
That's a lot of lost boys. And really, you know, you're supposed to have your time as a boy, and then ideally you transition and become a young man and then a contributing man in the community. And the biggest issue I see is that we're not creating formal rites of passage for our boys and or our young men, and therefore we risk ending up with men who are still actually acting like boys.
Describe a man who's not grown up. Where do we see these men? What are the telltale signs?
Okay, I'll tell you, and then if any women are listening to this program, they can see whether they know men like this. So I've written a model on boy psychology, which is it's all about me. I want attention all the time. I'm the center of the universe. I don't take responsibility for my actions. I can't stand with my emotions. So if something goes wrong, I lose my temper. And I want a mother. That's a boy. Whereas a healthy man actually does what he does because he believes in it and it's the right thing to do. He recognises that power is for sharing and for the good of his community. He's accountable for his actions. He can stand with his emotions. And he's not actually looking for a mother. He's looking for, you know, relationship with the feminine.
So an equal.
That's right.
Mark, tell us about the work you do with Red Frog. Explain what the group does.
Yeah, so Red Frogs has been operating for over 15 years. So a rite of passage, which is quite common and something that often parents lose their fingernails, is an event called Schoolies Week. So our volunteers work down at an event called Schoolies Week right across Australia and also overseas. So we're the sober people at this event.
So therefore really easy to find and obvious.
It is. That's true. Yeah, our guys are out and about and they're also armed with Allen's Red Frogs. And so you get taught pretty much as a kid to not take lollies from strangers. But yep. When you're at Schoolies Week, the guys giving out the lollies are the good guys. They're to walk you home safely, put you on a bus, cook your free pancakes, all that kind of stuff. Again, just being that positive presence, practical support and a bit of emotional support as often, you know, schoolies do. Guys and girls sometimes have a meltdown.
Do you see these lost boys much during this Schoolies Week? I mean, this is what I'm thinking, so I'm just going to say it. What you're describing to me is binge drinking. Young people, boys and girls, do that a lot on Schoolies Week. And, of course, that brings out all sorts of emotions. Is it just about that or is it more complex?
A little bit more. And I think it is a bit of an Australian way too. The whole Schoolies event and even these large events where there is a lot of pressure, a lot of build-up, hype, anticipation centred around drinking, having a good time. And unfortunately, when there's hype and emotion, especially an event like Schoolies Week, it's actually an artificial environment which produces abnormal behaviour. So often when there's high expectations, unfortunately when there's alcohol involved, so often it doesn't deliver, and unfortunately we see guys and girls experiencing disappointment with the expectation that they have, and that's where emotionally they do have moments where they put themselves in vulnerable situations and can be isolated from their friends.
And put themselves at risk.
Totally.
Anna, Mark mentioned rites of passage before, as you did, but you talk a lot about these. How do we create these in a culture, and I'm referring now very specifically to Anglo-Saxon culture, to white culture in Australia, because there are many cultures in Australia that I think some might be doing it a bit better. I'd like you to reflect on that. But how do we do that in white culture?
Yeah, look, it's such a great question. And I think we look on rites of passage sort of suspiciously and in the wrong way. And that's, for me, a real shame because at its essence, a rite of passage is about supporting a healthy transition for a boy to become a young man and a girl to become a young woman, and also to help each of the people who are going through a rite of passage really find out who they are and to support and acknowledge the spirit, the genius, the gifts and talents that are in each of them. And in a lot of my work where I looked at all sorts of cultures, what I found was that there were always the same elements and we can use those elements. So basically it's about sharing stories as a way of passing on knowledge. Kids love hearing the stories of adults and it's no reason why we can't continue to do that. And so that when they have a rite of passage, they get to hear the stories of elders as a way of learning about how it will be to be an adult. We need to create appropriate challenges for our children because, once again, if we don't, they're going to go and create their own. And the final thing is to really acknowledge that the fact that each of them is different, each of them has their own individual gifts and talents, and that's who we want them to be. And I believe it is completely possible to be creating rites of passage so that every one of our children go through it. And what I'm finding is now more and more schools are recognizing this and looking at ways that things like their year 9 and 10 camps can actually be turned into a rite of passage and really support this transition that we're talking about in a healthy way.
So can it be a small event or occasion, or does it have to be a big challenging back to nature experience?
No, look, it can be done in lots of ways. It can also be done in the family home. There's no reason why, you know, when your boy turns 14, 15, you can't invite some relatives and good friends around and, once again, share stories. You know, talk about challenges and what sort of man he wants to be and how you're going to support him and then honour him. You know, just give speeches about the things that you love about him and the gifts and talents that you see that he has.
We know that in Jewish culture there is the bar mitzvah, which is very much that moment for boys. And, of course, in Indigenous communities that I've spent time in, there is often a ritual which involves older men taking young boys and doing something I don't know about because it's usually secret, but it's the same sort of construct that it's about becoming a man. So there are different groups doing it. Are they doing it well?
Look, I think a lot of them have lost their essence, unfortunately. But, you know, there's an interest. We've all heard the expression, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, there's another African proverb, which is that if we don't initiate our boys, they will burn down the village to feel the heat. And they are actually demanding something. They're demanding something that actually gives them even their own personal recognition that they're becoming a man. And the thing is, with the becoming a man, turning 18, whatever, they get privileges. So they can now legally drink, they can drive cars, they can do all these things. But the thing that they're not getting is that there are responsibilities that come along with this. And in a rite of passage, the privilege and the responsibilities actually get matched together. And because we're not doing that, we see the kids going out, things like schoolies or in their cars or rock concerts or whatever. They demand all the privileges, they go crazy, but they don't do it responsibly. And we create these really dangerous situations.
On RN Drive, you're in the drawing room and my guests are Dr. Anna Rubenstein. He's the author of The Making of Men, and Mark Jelly, who has spent many years mentoring young men. Mark, are enough men showing up for boys? Are enough men catching on that boys are struggling and that boys do need that kind of help? Because I know you're doing it in a professional capacity, but are men taking on these leadership roles?
Yeah, well, I've had some experience also working in professional sporting clubs. We do see more of that mentoring happening in our society. And I know in our society at the moment, we do see those that are professional athletes being those real role models and mentors. So that is sometimes quite challenging as well for a young male who wants to aspire to be a footballer or a rugby league player or something like that. So that is also a challenge because we obviously know there's a small percentage of men that actually do take that step to be a professional athlete. So I think we do need to create more role models that aren't just professional athletes, and it's part of our work. We are very intentional of coming alongside young men through our university program and other stuff that we do, and just being able to just be present and be consistent in people's lives. I think that's one of the mottos that we really ask and really encourage our volunteers and our key people that do spend time with young men is to just be present and consistent.
We need to find a way to bring this into the culture. I think we have gotten to the point where we are recognising there's a problem, but we're only just beginning to be looking at the solutions and what we can actually be doing.
So you talk about it being a problem. What are the manifestations of that problem?
Oh, well, when we see, first of all, things like mental health issues, when we see the fights, the single punch injuries that are happening, when we see the behaviour that happens on schoolies, the binge drinking, the drug taking, you know, all of these things are actually signs that there's something wrong. You know, there's something.
But aren't they just part of adolescence as well? Just putting that out there, yeah, and be devil's advocate here. But aren't they sort of an inevitable part of growing up? You grow up, you make mistakes, you explore different things that sometimes can be dangerous to you. You learn from that experience.
Yeah, I have two sons, 23 and 25, and I remember when they were at their schoolies age. And for me as a parent, I want my sons to have a good time. I want them to explore their boundaries, but I don't want them to do something that's going to affect them negatively for the rest of their lives. And I think to just let our kids go out there unsupervised and do whatever comes their way is actually extremely dangerous. You know, we need a million marks running around the place who are not actually telling the kids what to do, but who are supporting them so that when the sort of the water gets too hot, they're actually there to be there. And my concern is we don't have enough people actually there in those really critical times.
Mark, did you go through some sort of rite of passage? How did you take an interest in wanting to help boys?
Yeah, so for me, I actually did attend schoolies as an 18-year-old. And I actually still recall that. It was actually a number of years ago. And on my 17th birthday, I was actually turning 18 on my first night at schoolies week. Ended up again.
The timing.
I know. High expectation. Ended up separated from a friend, ended up at the casino, lost a fair bit of money, disappointed on the night that I thought I was going to have. Friends weren't with me, ended up sitting at the casino on the river and just been really disappointed and quite flat. And I still look back and recall on getting myself in a situation like that. So every year, even in my role with Red Frogs and other stuff, I come across young men that are at those crossroads where they're transitioning.
You can see yourself in them.
Yeah, and absolutely. So, and we see that. And I think for me, it's just been, again, just being present, being consistent, and again, having someone, whoever it is, obviously family, the makeup of the family, even our society is really changed, but continuing in our community to be positive presence and be present in people's lives is so important.
We talk a lot about men mentoring young boys. How about single mothers, families raised by women? Because there are a lot of them in this country and around the world where women are actually playing the role of raising men. What can women learn about raising young men?
It's definitely a reality. You know, one in three families in Australia have no father there. And I see lots of women who do a fantastic job, but they commonly say, look, I'm trying to be the father and the mother to this young man. And I would encourage all single women to also, as well as what they're doing, try and bring good men into their children's lives.
That's a fraught issue, though, isn't it? Because, well, I don't even have to explain why. I think the listeners will understand. Bringing men in is a very difficult thing. It's about trusted men.
Correct. And so I say first, if you can start in the family with grandfathers, uncles, good family friends, coaches or whatever, and even for, you know, the mothers to go up to those men and say, hey, you know, my son needs some help. He needs some male support. Would you be prepared to actually support him? And in my experience, when a man is actually asked to step up, he very often, most commonly, will. And of course, we've had the tragic situation of men who have abused that situation, and kids have been, you know, abused, and we can't deny that. But I think that is the minority, and for a whole generation of young men to miss out on mentoring because of the totally inappropriate actions of a few people.
Sure, but can women mentor too? Because I just find in your analysis it's extremely gendered, and I think that gender is a little more fluid than that. Can women play those roles too?
Sure, they can, and they should. And I think for boys to have female mentors is brilliant, and for girls to have male mentors, and you're right, the roles are so much more fluid, and really it's about elders mentoring the young. Ideally, they have mentors of both genders and with great diversity.
And sometimes they want to look beyond their own parents, don't they? That's something I've certainly experienced anecdotally. They might have a father, but it is your father. Sometimes you're looking for another man as a role model. Is that common?
Yeah, commonly we often get emails or phone calls post an event like Schoolies Week, Orientation Week or a music festival from a parent just thanking us for walking their son or daughter home or cooking them pancakes, helping them with their cut knee or whatever's gone on, and And, you know, often the parents saying, look, we've been talking to our son or daughter about the same stuff, but when it came from you guys, they really appreciate it. They really loved it, and it really made a big difference.
Because you're an independent voice, because people inevitably you see your parents as having pretty a loaded connection to you, don't you?
Yeah, that's that whole community thing. There's a time when, you know, your child won't listen to you but will listen to me. My child won't listen to me but will listen to you. Hey, great. Let's mentor each other's children. That's back to that original comment. It does take a village to raise a child, to support a child, to watch over a child, so that when he's not in the care or she's not in the care of the direct parents, that, you know, all the other elders are also watching them at the same time.
I want to thank you both for coming in. Hopefully we can start doing a better job of some of this stuff. That's at least what we're hoping. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's Dr. Anna Rubenstein. He's the author of The Making of Men, which you can get at any bookshop right now. And Mark Jelly, who's spent many years mentoring young men, joining me tonight.